If you have your own story of being in a cult or a high control group, or if you've had an experience with manipulation or abuse of power you'd like to share, leave us a message on our hotline number at 513-900-2955.
Or shoot us an email at trustmepod@gmail.com.
Trust me.
Dude, you trust me.
Trust me. I'm like a smart person.
Yeah, I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you.
If you think that one person has all the answers,
don't!
Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast about cults, extreme belief, and the abuse of power from two misses who've actually experienced it. I am Lola Blanc.
And I am Megan Elizabeth.
Miss Megan Elizabeth. To you?
Yeah. Miss Free, what is that Janet Jackson thing? Miss Nasty, no. Miss something if you nasty.
Miss Independent if you're Kelly Clarkson.
Somebody out there is like so much cooler
you're not.
Than me.
Yeah. All right, a couple of misses. This week is part two of our interview with Christina Babin, survivor of the Children of God. So she's going to tell us this week in part two about life in the reprogramming camps, which were these incredibly abusive guarded compounds where the children were controlled every single moment. She's going to talk about how difficult it is to come forward about an experience like this and how survivors aren't looking for your pity.
Mm. And then I love this part. She'll also talk to us about how she got married, her first taste of freedom that led to her finally leaving the group, and what she loves about her life now.
This episode does contain references to child abuse, so consider this your content warning. It's some heavy shit, but it is important, I think, and she has a pretty cool perspective on it all now, I say.
Agreed.
So, Megan, time for the question. You know what I'm gonna ask. What is the cultiest thing that has happened to you this week?
Well, I have some news, like some world news.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty interesting, actually. Kind of excited about it. I don't think you know it yet. So I don't know. Maybe you do. But remember our friend Chad Daybell?
Yes.
Yes. Lori and Chad Daybell, they've been in the news. They are accused or under suspicion. Is that a word? Under suspicion?
They're being investigated. They're charged. Aren't they actually charged?
I think they might be charged. Remember when we were on like a Zoom with a lot of important people once? And I was like, just to backpack back onto the back of what Lola said. And everyone was like, I'm sorry, what? Okay. You guys, they're bad people. They're bad fucking people. They have been accused of killing a lot of people. Two of them, Lori's precious kids. Every time I see a picture of them, I want to die. They're adorable. So anyway, his other children coming forth and saying, oh, no, our dad didn't do that because he used to be a grave digger and he would have dug way deeper graves.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's like heartbreaking, man. Like that is like the world's like most extreme case of cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
It's just like right there in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they were like, what? 2 feet down instead of 6 feet down.
Exactly.
Or,
yeah. Mm-hmm. All on his property. And she was just like, he wouldn't be dumb enough to hide them on his property. Plus, he used to be a gravedigger, so he knows better. Just dig a little bit deeper. And I think, you know, the rest of the world is kind of like, well, he didn't have all the time in the world, lady. You know, sometimes you just gotta bury the bodies.
And last I checked, being a gravedigger by profession doesn't make you like worse at burying bodies. Like,
no,
it's not like it's counter to the skill of burying a body. Like, pretty sure that's like a helpful tool,
a helpful
to have
skill. Yeah. And I mean, they have so many machines though to do it at a cemetery,
right?
Like,
versus
not,
doing it by
have,
yourself,
like a little bucket and a shovel like from the kiddie part of Rite Aid, you know.
Yeah,
that's what he has now if he's not at the graveyard.
Can you imagine though, like, that's your dad. Like, that's your dad. Like,
no.
I get the mental gymnastics. Like, I get why you would want to do those mental gymnastics. Because how could you believe that about someone that you love? I mean, it would just be so traumatizing.
Oh,
I can't even imagine.
Awful. Yeah. Anyway.
Ugh, what a sad fucking story, man.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, what
would
about
you? Like
you?
To hear? Yeah,
I'm dying.
Okay. I know I've been talking about my anxiety lately. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it today.
Great.
So, you guys, I, like, had my first experience with like capital A anxiety, which I thought anxiety just meant like, oh, I'm anxious about this thing. Like I'm stressed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that anxiety like like actual like clinical anxiety is an experience that is so terrifying and difficult to explain that I feel like a freak when I talk to people about it, because they're like, what's the big deal? Like, you're just anxious. And mm-hmm. I'm like, no, it feels like I'm going to die mm-hmm. or that I'm going crazy, one or the other. What was happening originally that like triggered this whole cycle was this feeling of unreality, this like depersonalization where the world, like I don't feel like anything is real, like I'm in a dream or I'm looking at things through glass. That had never happened to me before in my entire life. Mm-hmm. I'm 33 years old. And so ever since then, I think I've mentioned on earlier episodes, like I tried getting on medication. I'm now tapering off the medication because it was making me feel like foggy and weird. And my psychiatrist was like, you don't right. have to feel weird all the time. This isn't how it's supposed to work. But so it's just been this crazy journey of like trying to figure out what to do about it. Because I'm like, is this just who I am now? This has been like 2 months and not every day is bad. Like I'm functional, but I wasn't mm-hmm. functional for a minute there for like a solid few weeks. So one of the things that I'm doing in this pursuit is I've gone now twice to a practitioner or a technician who does what's called neurofeedback.
Ooh, I just did that too.
Did you?
Yeah. Did you do it in Santa Monica?
The West Side.
Yeah, me too. In that building on the 9th floor?
No, I did it at some guy's house.
Oh, okay.
He is not the type of person, y'all, that I would normally go to. And it makes me feel, I'm a little uncomfortable with it, to be honest. Because
so I'm thinking a lot of crystal bracelets on him.
Not crystal bracelets, but he's mentioned chakras a few times and I'm like, uh-huh. please just don't talk about chakras. Please mm-hmm. just don't talk about chakras. Like, I know that there is actual evidence to support neurofeedback as a viable. I mean, the reason I even started going was because I read The Body Keeps the Score and there's a whole section on it. And I was like, this sounds amazing. And like, basically there's electricity in your brain, right? The electric waves in your brain, if it's like, if they're going too fast in one section or too slow in another, that can be what contributes to dysfunction is the general theory. And for me, I'm like, I feel like there's something like structurally fucked up because this has like never happened before and it's so extreme or whatever. So I've now gone to this guy twice. And like I said, there is evidence that it works. It's just like it's still early. Like it's a growing body of evidence.
Right.
And it's like there haven't been enough like controls for like the way that they do it and who, you know, the particular methodology or whatever. So as a result, there are some like hokey people who are doing it because it's like, still, you know, not that well known or like some sort of fringe people do it. However, this guy was cheap. He was doing the same exact technology that other people are doing. Same program. He's a licensed technician. He just happens to be a hokey guy and he was more affordable. So I was like, okay, fuck it. I'm going to try this.
Amen.
How many times have you gone?
Just once.
And okay. I went twice today.
My friend mm-hmm. who told me about it was like, it's really weird when it's on, like you feel strange. I didn't really feel strange, but I definitely had like a very emotional night afterwards. So I don't know.
I felt nothing the first time. Today, he said he went a lot stronger because it didn't seem like I reacted to the first time. And I definitely felt like, oh, like a buzziness in my head, like a little bit flushed.
I want that.
I mean,
turn
go
it
again.
Up.
It was session number two, y'all.
Raise the roof. Okay, I'm gonna do this then.
But I just want to say one thing that I've keep learning over and over again, in case anyone out there is struggling with anxiety disorder or panic disorder. Actually, first of all, I discovered this app called Dare. This is not a sponsored thing. I just love this app. It's amazing. This app called Dare is great because
Dare,
it keeps
the like drug thing.
It's called Dare, but I can't remember what it stands for, but it's basically a technique to defeat your anxiety. Not defeat, though. Actually, it's the opposite of defeat.
And work this with is it. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is the problem that I keep having is that I keep wanting to resist it. And every time I try to resist it, it makes it so much worse. Whereas when you just let it in and accept it and allow it and befriend it, that is the only thing that helps. It's the only. And yeah. Anyway, just saying that in case anyone else is having this, because I had never gone through anything like this. And I felt like a fucking crazy person. And like I was alone in this. None of my friends. Actually, Dannon has experienced this, but yeah, otherwise, like, none of my friends have.
Yep.
Do you get like,
oh yeah. I mean, I had such bad panic attacks for like a year of my life that it ruined my life. I couldn't even
really
leave the house. Yeah, it was a nightmare. Every single night I would have to die.
Good God.
Yeah. Every single night.
How did you recover?
Well, this is something that I always suggest people do. I had a friend. I called one of my friends and was like, hey, I have to get on medication and I have to figure this out, but I don't have the energy to even start knowing what that process looks like. So can you come over and just call a bunch of people with me? And we found a really good recommendation for a psychiatrist, and she put me on Prozac. And I remember we have a friend in common, Adam. I remember Adam and I went and saw a movie that night, and Prozac has always just worked so perfectly for me. Even in high school, I take it in 10 minutes later, I'm my compulsions are so much chiller, and I've been on a million others and none of them work like that for me. So anyway, that night I felt, we were sitting watching the movie and I felt the dying start to happen. Oh, here it comes, build it up. But I could just feel the medicine actually fighting it for me. And I was like, oh, I want to fuck Prozac. I love it.
If I haven't gotten better at managing it once I'm tapered off of the Lexapro, Prozac would probably be the next one that I would try. But my psychiatrist said I'm exquisitely sensitive to medication because I was only on 5 milligrams, which is an extremely low dose.
Yeah.
And I was having gnarly side effects.
Yeah, but that's not good.
It makes sense because I've never had alcohol still ever in my life. So my body's like, what is this chemical? You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My body's like, yay.
I will keep y'all posted on how neurofeedback goes. The studies that have been done, they're very promising. It's 70 to 80% remission of chronic anxiety or something like that. So,
bye, bitch.
But I'm not trying to fight it. I'm trying to welcome it, but maybe give my brain a little edge as I do the work.
Right. We're not trying to get rid of you, but if you wanted to just chill a little bit, it would be fine.
If you wanted to just fucking disappear, that would be amazing. Thanks.
That's truly how all my self conversations go, where I start out and I'm like, it's fine. I'm going to sit here with you. I love it. This part of you needs to be here. And then at the end, I'm like, but why the fuck are you still here? I know. You were supposed to leave when I said that.
I know. But the DARE app is really good for that. Those pep talks they give you about accepting and welcoming your feelings. Oh, they're amazing. Anyway.
I feel like DARE. Okay. I'm going to download that DARE.
I posted about it on my story today. I'm their ambassador
now.
Does
it cost anything?
I think it does. I think I paid something. I can't remember how much it was, but
it costs
your
anxious
thinking.
There's
probably a free version. Exactly. It costs more to not get it, Megan.
Again, not sponsored by anyone.
I just really like it. Okay. I've tried so many apps this past couple weeks, and this is by far the best.
Okay, I'm going to get it right now then.
Okay. Anyway, I think it's probably time to get back to part two of our interview. What do you think?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it. I'm just fascinated by these camps because I think you're right. People really fixate on the sexual abuse of the children, which obviously is absolutely horrific. But there is so much other extreme kinds of abuse going on that just get overlooked.
Absolutely. Yeah. The camps were definitely the roughest, and that's where they concentrated all of their thought reform on us. And the one in the Philippines, it literally had walls. At the time, they seemed like they were 15 feet high. Maybe they were only 10. I don't know. But they had barbed wire and broken glass bottles surrounding the entire compound. We had armed guards guarding the inside of the walls with us. There were different theories as to why they were there, but it was never addressed. I figured it was to keep us in. Other people believed it was to keep the world out. Either way, it was a great deterrent for any of us trying to escape.
Of course.
Did people try? Did little kids ever try to escape? And what did that look like?
Okay, so I never witnessed anybody trying to escape. My best friend there at the time, she was my secret best friend. She had asked to leave. She said she wanted to go live with her parents. And she was thrown into isolation. She was beaten. She was put on silence restriction. And then she was publicly had an exorcism done against her. So you didn't even speak those words, much less try. Now, before going to the commune, I had watched other people try to escape. And a lot of times the cult members would find them and bring them back, and the punishments were extreme. Mm. Sometimes the police would bring them back.
Wow.
You have to remember, like, we were in a foreign country. We were never taught to fully speak the languages that we were in. We were not allowed to have friends outside of the group. Our passports were always confiscated. So there was no way to get out. You couldn't explain what was happening. And if you did and you brought the authorities back, the entire commune was trained in how to respond and how to act. So there really was no escape.
Mm.
A lot of older teenagers escaped, but a lot of them died. A lot of them were homeless on the streets. A lot became prostitutes. You didn't have a landing space if you did leave.
Right.
And so I watched that happening. I was like, nope. They would have these cautionary tales. They would find out, like, okay, this is what happened. And then they would tell us, here's what happened. Right. The founder would talk about it, and they were out of God's protection. They were out of God's will. And look what happened to them.
That's a really great point that Naomi, who was also on the show, made, which is that, like, when you're coming out of a group that has such extreme control, I mean, this is, I think, the most extreme group that I've heard of.
Yes.
In terms of, like, literally physically restricting you from leaving. What resources do you have? Where do you even go if your whole family is in this group? Like, even if you were able to jump over the wall, like, what do you do then? You know, I mean, it's just so horrible.
And you're so innocent, and you are such at the world's mercy.
Right.
And most of the world is good, but there are predators out there. You know, it's not safe without a tribe.
Right.
You know, you're not safe completely on your own. So, you know, one thing, though, that I really want to stress before we go on is that, yes, we all went through a lot, and we've all overcome a lot. We receive a lot of either pity or people wanting to shy away from the subject. Mm-hmm. But we are not pathetic. We are not people that you need to pity. The people that have come out of this and survived and that are living fulfilling lives, like, we are strong people. We don't need anybody's pity.
Yeah.
We are speaking out because the world needs to know that this happened. We bought and paid for this story of life that we lived.
Right.
It was a high price that we paid. So we have the right to tell our story and to be proud of ourselves. We have the right to try to inform the world that this stuff is real. This was a massive conspiracy that has gone on for decades and successfully, I might add. So, you know, yes, it's taken us a long time to start fighting back, but that's because trauma doesn't just heal overnight. You don't get out of a destructive cult. You guys know that. You know, you're working through stuff for years, maybe the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that people that come out are looking for attention. You definitely don't make money coming out.
Oh, no.
This is to inform the public.
Yeah.
This is to inform people that this stuff is real. And we all want freedom from keeping the secret of our keepers.
Right.
Like, I will no longer participate.
Right.
Yeah. Like I said, it took me 10 years to be able to admit to myself the levels and, like, the how deep the rabbit hole went. And then it took me another 10 years to feel comfortable to come out and say it out loud to other people. You know, that's why the statute of limitations is so discouraging, because if you don't come after your abusers by the time that you're 21 or in 15 years, then it's too late. And people are still healing. You know, that's, you're not ready.
Oh my gosh. Of course.
The average person that comes out that has been abused as a child is 58 years old.
Wow.
This has been studied.
Wow.
So if you come out before you're 58, you're doing good. So our laws are not lined up with the reality of how long it takes to heal, you know, and when you're ready to talk about it.
Yeah, I think people really misunderstand that. I think that's a really important point. To even be able to acknowledge to yourself that you've experienced abuse can take so many years.
Yeah.
Especially if you're brainwashed.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, even if that's just like one single incident of abuse that can take years to admit to yourself, if you ever even do. So if you've experienced this entire life of this, the complicated feelings about family and then all of the indoctrination, like, of course, that's just going to take forever. Yeah. It's amazing that anyone can even like come out and talk about it. What you're doing is amazing, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, then back to y'all, you know. I do think that there's some like healing and forgiveness that has to take place too before you come out and speak about it.
Mm-hmm.
Your motives have to be not right, but you have to have the proper perspective, because if you're coming out for revenge, you're probably never going to get it, you know.
And right, right.
It's not about revenge. It's about informing people. It's about shining a light on reality.
Yeah.
And letting people know that this stuff is real. And how do we keep these things from happening again? Because we're starting to see echo chambers. We're starting to see these big divides again in society. And it's concerning to me that people hate each other because they're on a different side politically or a different side religiously.
Yeah.
We're all humans. We're all humans. We don't need to be divided. And if you strongly disagree with somebody else, the best thing to do is listen and find out why they think those crazy things, not to shame them, not to hate them. That's how we create a environment where you can have these destructive groups, is by creating echo chambers and creating this environment where people don't speak the truth of how they feel in that moment. Because the fact is, all three of us are here today to say, you can change your mind. Your views can change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to think some crazy things, right? As kids and growing up. And now we're like, that's crazy. You know, so even if somebody is on what you would consider the wrong side of the fence, there is hope for change. But not by only speaking to people that agree with us. I think it's important to talk to people who don't.
Yeah.
Maybe not all the time, or maybe not in your fun time, but I do think that's your dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely. Can you tell us how you met your husband and how you first began the process of leaving?
Okay. Well, again, that took a lot longer than what other people think it should have. It was 1994, I believe, when the founder passed away. And at that time, there was a huge court case going on over in the UK against the Children of God, against the Family International. And it was funny because they kind of hailed it as a win. But really what happened was Lord Justice Ward, he confirmed that the cult was overtly responsible for promoting child adult sex, that he cited numerous times that people were lying under oath. And he said the only way that the mother was going to have any interaction with their child was if they made major reforms in the cult. Now, I disagree with what he said in that he said they used to be abusing and now they're not, so we're not going to penalize them.
Oh,
that's not how the law should work. hoping that they change and counting on liars and criminals to change is not how the law is supposed to work. But it was definitely not an endorsement of the cult. But at that time, the founder had passed away and his wife, Karen Zerbe, she decided she was going to try to make the cult a little more legitimate. She promised the judge that they were going to do some reforms. So things kind of softened up a little bit. It was still a cult, but they started kind of talking about maybe that we had some rights. So in 1995, they decided to come up with something called the Love Charter. And it was basically like giving us rights, that we were allowed to choose our local leaders, because that was all mandated from above. You were allowed to drink more than one cup of coffee, just different things. Sex with anybody under 16 was not allowed.
Okay. Progress.
So that, you know, just, it was progress. Yeah. And so during that time, my husband had met the Family International in Japan, when he had just had a major accident, and he met them and they love bombed him. And they told him, we're doing all this great, wonderful mission work. And he was like, oh my God, I want to do mission work and help people. So he had kind of signed up to join. He cut off from his parents and his family, which was required. You just weren't supposed to talk to them. And there's a 6-month indoctrination that you have to go through, where basically they just put you in a room and you just read the founder's writing and you don't do anything else. You don't talk to people. You just read all the time.
Whoa.
And so at the end of the 6 months, if you still want to join, and of course they don't let you read everything. They just let you read all the stuff that promotes this beautiful life that you have.
Right.
And actually right before that, there was something called the Great Purge. When I left the prison camp, that's when the Great Purge started. My passport was burned. Every single commune around the world had to burn certain books. We had to go through page by page and draw bathing suits on any of the naked women in the pictures.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, yes.
So there's a mass cover up of anything that would imply illegal things had gone on, basically.
Yes.
Wow. Yes. And why your passport? Did they do that to everyone too?
So we couldn't prove where we were.
Oh,
I had been in the Philippines, which was a super secret place. So they wanted no evidence. You weren't really allowed to have pictures of other people. We didn't know the addresses of where we lived. We didn't know anybody's legal names. You weren't allowed to share your legal name with anybody else. You weren't allowed to know anybody's legal names. All the houses that were rented were either rented with an alias. They had like fake IDs. There would be a couple select people that would open up communes. And everything would be done under these fake identities. We were very good at hiding. And so when I came back to the States, I was part of a fake commune that was set up to fool the media. And in this commune, we had only 3 children. Most communes had like 50 or 100. So there were 3 children in this commune. We did mission work and we did a lot of photo opportunities. And we would invite the media to come and film us and watch what we were doing. And we said, this is what we are. This is what we do. This is what it looks like. And I knew what was going on. I knew what I was doing. I remember at the time NBC came to film. And because the founder had passed away and Karen Zerbe was part of it, you know, this change that I thought was coming, I was like, okay, we've always been, it's called deceivers yet true. We've always lied to the outside world. You know, maybe a change is coming. So like, hang in there because you can't survive outside.
Right.
Anyway, same time my husband was in training, I ended up meeting him and I was just instantly fascinated with him. He had read books and I thought he was the smartest person on earth. To me, he was even smarter than the founder because he talked about the books that he read. He had read sci-fi. He was educated. He had gone to high school. I'd say he's a pretty witty, bright high schooler. But in my mind, he was an astrophysicist. I was like, oh, God. So right at that time, he decided that it was too controlling and he hadn't seen any abuse or anything like that. He just was like, this is too controlling. It's not for me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Linda, we cannot leave. We can't leave. He was like, no, let's go. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. He wanted me to come visit his parents. And I was like, we cannot leave the commune. If we go visit your family, they won't let us back. And he was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, and if that's true, who cares? And I was like, no, we can't. And I didn't know how to explain it. I didn't know how to tell him. He could not comprehend at all what I was saying.
Of course. Yeah.
So my first 2 kids were born in it. And then we went and visited his parents once. And then the second time we went to visit them, I guess his mom or something had said like, oh, you can come stay with us. And I was like, oh, wait, what? And I remember them, his family, just all sitting around and eating dinner together and talking and laughing and arguing. And I was just amazed. I was like, this is chaos. And it was scary and like thrilling, just this normal conversation, because they were like bickering with each other and then it would get kind of heated and then somebody would make a little smart ass remark and then they'd all start laughing. And I was just like, what is going on? It was so foreign to me, but I loved it. So we ended up leaving And it was awesome. And I don't know if we have time, but I can tell you about, like, I think the first time I mentally broke free.
Please.
Before you tell us that, I do want you to tell us that. But can you clarify? So you got married and you're allowed to be married in the cult?
No. So they forbid us to get married.
Okay.
They said we cannot get married. They did not approve. They actually tried to separate us. They told him that he was going to be sent to the leadership, to WS, and that the cult was going to take care of the baby. And he said, no. Like, for me, I was like, of course they're saying that. But he was like, no, like, we want to get married. And they were like, no, you can have sex, but you cannot get married. And for 2 years, they refused to let us to get married. So when we got out, we got married. And then we were married for 23 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's wow. So you see this normal family, and that's exciting. Had you been thinking about leaving already? Like, where was your head at?
Yeah. So I had been fantasizing about leaving my whole life. Yeah. But because I didn't think leaving in the traditional way would ever work, I would fantasize about the end time coming and the Antichrist coming, and all the adults would just, they would all be martyrs before me. And then I would be all alone and I'd be one of the last martyrs, and I would have to run out into the world and be a prophet, and I'd be on my own that way.
Wow. So, like,
that's cognitive dissonance right
yes.
there. Like, I want to leave and I don't want to be in the cult. So how can I make it work in my mind? Oh, everybody dies.
Wow.
Yeah. Everybody has to die. We're all going to die anyway, but it's just, I won't be dying with them. I'm going to have like 3 years of being a lone prophet in the world all by myself.
Oh my gosh.
And have to go seek refuge with kind systemites. You know, I don't know. I never really got past that. I was just always like, ooh, it was like a dark fantasy I had.
I love that everyone dying is the only shred of hope that you had. That's very telling.
Yeah, it was. After the Philippines, though, when they broke me, I remember coming to, I lost a couple months of memory, and I came to realize I had lost time, and I just was so low and had no hope. I was a broken person. But there was this little tiny flame in me that was like, okay, this is not right. This is wrong. I just didn't like them anymore. So I kind of was like, okay, I actually want to get away from them. So I just was always kind of looking like, how could it happen? My fantasies kind of stopped because I no longer really believed that I was going to be an end time martyr for Christ, that I was going to have superpowers. Because my powers never came in. Like, I was supposed to shoot fire out of my fingers, and I wasn't seeing any evidence of that. And I just realized that they were also the enemy, that the cult, while the outside world was my enemy, I was like, okay, I'm just surrounded by enemies. They're also my enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of always looking for a way out, and I just wasn't ever seeing one.
Right.
And so it wasn't until he took me home to see his family that I was like, they had a huge, beautiful plantation home out in the middle of the country in Louisiana in the sugarcane fields. And I guess because it was in the country and it wasn't like in a big city, it felt safe.
Mm-hmm.
It was this tiny little bit of paradise. There was a pecan orchard and we would pick pecans every day and fill the baskets with pecans. And I guess it was so like old school and it just felt very safe and comfortable. That was the first time that I was like, okay, maybe we could live out here.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And it was out there. So I was 21 and I had 2 kids and I had never driven a car and I never thought that I would be able to drive a car. And my ex had said, you know, well, you have to drive. Like, that's something that adults do. And I was like, oh, I don't know. So he, 2 weeks, he was teaching me how to drive the stick shift. He was a very impatient teacher and there was lots of tears and not like that. I basically learned how to drive in that 2 week period. And one day he had taken the kids to the grocery store and his parents were gone and there was nobody around and I was by myself. I remember I had gotten like a little pair of jean shorts from the thrift store, and jeans were forbidden. We were never allowed to wear jeans because they were too worldly. And I had on my little sassy jeans and a big oversized man t-shirt, But again, I thought that was very, I thought I was very worldly. I had just bought like a little stick of lipstick and I was like, oh, I'm so badass. And then I was like, it felt really weird just being all alone. And I was like, I could get in the car and drive. Mm. And so I got my purse, I got in the car, I turned it on. I turned the radio on, which my husband had taught me, like, oh, you can turn the radio on. You can listen to music. That was not allowed at all. It never happened. So I put the radio on and it was some American rock and roll song. And I started driving and the windows were down. And it must have been sometime in September because the sugarcane was really high. And it was these little dirt roads all throughout the sugarcane fields. And I was just driving the car. The wind was blowing my hair and the rock music was playing. And I was like, I felt so badass. I was like, oh my God, I'm so free. I was like, okay, you got to check your speed. And I looked down and I'm going like 20 miles an hour. And I was like, it was hilarious. But then as I was driving, I just had this irresistible urge to keep driving. And I was like, okay, I literally, like, it just kind of hit me. I could drive and keep driving and nobody can stop me.
Mm.
And I mean, I had two beautiful children that I loved. It was kind of like, kind of got quiet, that part of me, because the freedom and the realization that I could drive and keep driving, like I was free to do that. It was so, so strong. And I kind of like took a few minutes to breathe and realized like, okay, no, I'm choosing to go back. And I turned around and went back and they came home. Everything was great. But it was just such a big realization to realize that I could leave the house by myself. I could get in the car and I could drive. And that was like the first big, like, mind blown. Mm. I don't know what you call that.
Wow. What a simple freedom. But I mean, I'm like transfixed. It sounds so exhilarating.
I know. I'm like, everybody go get in their car right now. If you have one, turn on some rock and roll, roll down the windows. And like,
seriously,
beautiful.
Open your front door and step outside.
Yeah.
It's
such an amazing thing that we get to do. And I do think that people who have not grown up like this, they can't even imagine not having freedom to not only own your own body, but you can't own your own thoughts.
Yeah.
We have a hard time comprehending that. But there are people who are living like this. And it is such a beautiful thing to be an individual and to have freedom and to be able to make choices. And I want that for everybody.
Mm. Yeah.
Even if I disagree with your choices, I want you to have the autonomy to make your own mind up to do what you think is right to do.
Right.
Unless it's hurting children. Let's not do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. No, not that.
Did you write a book or you're writing a book?
I'm writing a book. It's proving a lot harder than I thought. So yeah. I was writing a book about my whole life and I got it all down. Then I realized it's too much. And there's also a lot of people that are writing books now about it. So I'm writing a book just about the prison camp and my time there.
Mm.
Because that was my real coming of age. That's, I think, when I learned the most. And that was the first time I allowed myself to actually connect to other humans, because I was so defensive before that and so indoctrinated that I just never really got close to people. And during that time, it was the worst time, but it was the time that I grew the most in my life and really established some deep relationships and got closer to my brother, who I hadn't really spent much time with, you know. So it's going to be a pretty intense book, but I'm shopping for an editor and a publisher. Taking me longer than I thought. I thought I would be done by now.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
So when did you like officially exit? What did that look like?
Okay, so that's the part where everybody wants a really dramatic ending, but there really is not. Because once you are over 18 and you leave, they don't want you to come back. Because it's such a closed community and there is so much milieu control. There is so much control over everything that comes in and out. If you go and spend 2 weeks out and come back, they don't like that. They don't want that. So if you were gone for a short time, they would actually like isolate you. You'd have to be vetted. You'd have to be re-indoctrinated before you were allowed to mix with other people. And then if you left for good and stopped giving money, then you were out. And they didn't really pursue you very much to try to get back in. So it's actually, as long as your family was not separated, it was easy to leave. Here's the difficult part, and this is where I think empathy needs to be put for our parents, is that they took your children away. And so they would take your partner away, marry you to somebody else. If you left with some of your children, they would hide all your other children from you. And you would never see them again. So you cannot leave. And then, you know, again, you're in another country. You're not allowed to use the telephone.
Right.
We suffered more than our parents. However, they were also held hostage.
Of course.
It was very difficult to leave. There are so many ways to hold people hostage that has nothing to do with tying them up.
Yeah.
If you control people's minds, you control their situation, you make them complicit in the abuse that you're suffering, then, you know, you're embarrassed to leave. You don't know how. Mm-hmm. You've given your power to them. It's so difficult. Really, really, really difficult. I know people that are still mentally in chains and that don't know how to break free. It's tough.
Yeah. I mean, if you're literally not even given time alone and you're not allowed to do anything that fosters independent thought, like, how do you even produce the thought that would lead you to leaving? Like, it's just so much more impossible than people even can imagine, I think.
Yeah, you don't even want to think those thoughts of leaving, because if it ever slips your mouth, if you ever make any movement towards that, they're on guard and they're looking for that. So you can't even let yourself go there.
Right.
It's, you know, you have to learn how to think. When you leave the cult, you literally have to learn how to think.
Yep.
Right. I know that something that was definitely true for my mom after all of the trauma that she experienced is, like, basically in leaving, you have to then acknowledge all of the trauma you've experienced and all of the life you've given up for an abusive group. And that leap is so hard to make, because once you accept that, you're like, I've wasted my life. Or, oh, wait, all those things I thought were because God wanted them were actually just like me being abused for years. Oh, cool. Don't really want that to be real.
Yeah. Your mom is an amazing person. I was so amazed by her story, like just how brave she is, and just she never gave in to dying. And you know, that's something that we all struggle with. Our suicide rate, we think, is 30% higher than the national average. We're having trouble like getting the numbers together, you know. So I have a lot of admiration for people like your mom who have been through that, didn't give in when they were so close to it. It's just really difficult. And then to stand up and be a stand up person and make the world a better place. Like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks. I agree. She's amazing. But so are you. And so are all survivors who come forward and all survivors who don't. I mean, there's
And that's the thing is, like, you know, we're not in a competition of who has been through the most trauma.
Yeah.
Just because some of us were more physically and sexually abused, that doesn't mean that, you know, your journey is not as difficult as ours. They've actually studied psychological, emotional abuse is actually just as harmful as physical abuse.
Yeah.
And we've all been through that. I mean, all of us in this room, but a lot of people have been through that. And a lot of people have been in abusive relationships.
Exactly.
Or been with destructive groups or been part of, you know, yoga groups that are controlled. There's all kinds. There's all kinds of difficult things to go through. And I'm so thankful that now we can talk about this, that we can share our stories, that we can stand up and say, no, we are strong. And we're not people that you need to pity and feel sorry for. We don't need to be ashamed of our past, and nobody else needs to put that on us. You want us in your life. You want us working at your company. We are strong people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And exactly. When I first came out, I tried putting like little feelers out to see if I could actually tell the truth. And every single time people were like, don't say that. Don't talk about that. Don't tell anybody that. Now we're living in a world where people are like, okay, I guess we got to listen to that. Okay.
Right.
And then younger people, like I find my kids who are in their 20s, they're championing this honesty and this openness about trauma and about abuse, and they don't look at it the same way that the older generation does. They're like, right. Wow, way to go. Like, their friends are like, wow, we're proud of your mom. It's awesome. Hmm. She can tell her story. We want to hear more. They're not afraid of that. And everybody gives the young people such a hard time, you know, these hipsters and these kids, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just amazed at their openness to the possibility that there are these difficult conversations that need to be had. And that's something I've never seen before. So I love it. Mm.
Me too. I feel like through my 20s, I sort of witnessed that change happening and witnessed was like, because I remember feeling ashamed and I remember feeling like it wasn't something that we could talk about. And then in 2015, I wrote about it. And then it seemed like it was a part of this. I mean, whatever. It had started happening before that, obviously. It was not the beginning of the wave. But I like was a part of the wave, like riding this wave of like, oh, we can actually share our stories and not be ashamed. And like people will actually be supportive of us. Like, what an amazing change. Thank God.
Yeah, it is.
Who wants to hide, you know?
Right, right.
Real quick. So I feel like we spend so much time talking about the heavy stuff and the dark stuff and the abuse. I just want to know, like, what do you love about your life now?
Just about everything. I remember watching a movie not long after I got out of the cult, and it was a movie called What Dreams May Come. It was with Robin Williams.
Yes.
And I remember his wife was, I was watching it and I thought visually it was beautiful because I was just starting to paint and be an artist, and she was struggling with being suicidal. And this one part in the movie, he goes to visit his wife in the institution and she's smoking. And he's like, why are you smoking? That's bad for you. And she says, my therapist says I need to affirm life. And I remember at the time realizing, like, she's not actually talking about the cigarette itself. She's talking about I need to live in the moment and do things that I enjoy. And that that was medication for being suicidal. It was like the antidote. And it's just such a good little glimpse into kind of like my philosophy. And it's just enjoying life and everything that's in it. And I do have such a wonderful life. I have amazing children, amazing friends. I get to be an artist full time. I get to leave my house. Mm. I'm a foodie. I love to eat and cook. I love to travel. I love to be in places I've never been before and be free. So like hopping on a plane and just flying somewhere or getting on a boat, you know, going to another country to relive all of those things that I never got to do. So like being in another country and being free and not having to beg on the street in a foreign country from the local natives who are probably starving themselves so that I can give money to my founder so that he can live a posh life. I can go to that country and enjoy that culture and taste their food. I can literally buy food and eat it. I don't have to dig in the garbage. I don't have to beg people for it. There's so much in life to enjoy. Life, I'm thirsty for all of it. I love it all. And it doesn't mean that life is perfect, but it is beautiful. And I'm very thankful. And part of that is not regretting what I went through. So I would not go back and take any of the pain that I experienced away. All the bad things that I went through made me just appreciate all the good things in life. And it gave me perspective. And I have a lot of empathy, too much empathy, but I have empathy for everybody. And I know what it's like to be weak. I know what it's like to be strong. I know what it's like to be in just so many different situations. I think everybody has their own journey. Everybody has their struggles. And I just think we should all affirm life and live in the moment and learn to just love whatever's in front of us and just enjoy it.
Love it.
Amen. Yeah. That's beautiful. Oh, I'm so glad I asked. That was such a good answer.
I know. You asked some questions. Yes. And we need to laugh. We need to truly laugh and have fun. And I do like enjoy humor and I enjoy dark humor and like, oh my God, it's so liberating.
Yep.
Do you want to promote your artwork? Is there a social media handle or anything you want to share?
I have an Instagram and it's called Artful South. Mm. And you can check out my murals and my fine art on there. And you can watch some documentaries that me and some other people have been doing. There's one on People Magazine Investigation Discovery that I was on. Another one just came out last night, which is a fantastic one. I suggest everybody go watch it. It's like a 5-part series, and it's called Children of the Cult. It's on Discovery Plus.
All right.
And they literally take you around the world, and you go on this trip around the world, and you experience life. And I know all these people on this documentary. There's a tiny little clip of me as a 12-year-old in one of the camps. I was like, ooh, I'm in a camp here.
Wow.
They burned my passport, but they didn't burn that video. So,
whoa.
But it's a beautiful documentary. It's so powerful. I suggest going to watch that. And then we're all writing books. We're, you know, a lot of us are speaking out. So we want you to know our story. But yeah.
Beautiful.
Great. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Okay. Yes. Thank you guys for having me. And thanks for doing this podcast. I love it.
Thank you. Well, I love to hear about how well she's doing and what she loves about her life. Now, it was actually really inspiring for me to hear this when we were doing the interview, because I was like in the throes of anxiety that day. And I was like, oh my God, she's right. There's so much to love about life. And I'm just missing it. Like, there's so much here to like look at and enjoy and appreciate. And just because I'm like scared, I'm going to get scared, essentially.
Right.
I'm like failing to see all this beauty that is before me. Anyway, so, you know, we've already discussed Children of God. I guess I'm just generally wondering, outside of our, like, known cult experiences, have you ever been love bombed?
Love bombed. Yeah, for sure. I just thought of someone. Yep.
Who? Go on.
It was this guy I dated. He was an actor, which used to be my problem. I would, like, meet somebody and think they were a chef or something, and then they'd be like, I'm an actor. And I'd be like, fuck, because I don't know. I just didn't want to date somebody who was really good at pretending. But I kept falling in love with them. And he, like, went so hard on how much he wanted to have children and get married. He wouldn't stop talking about how much he enjoyed me and how bad he wanted to have kids and how much he wanted to get married and all of this shit. And it was like kind of scaring me. And then I met a few other girls who were also dating him, and he was doing the same shit. And I was like, oh my God, he was trying to love bomb me.
Oh my God.
Fucking psycho.
Classic tale.
Classic psycho.
It's very similar to experiences I've had. One with a director, one with a very famous musician who's now known as a bad person. I'm out of breath because I was just running up the stairs. You guys didn't hear, but we took a pause. I'm out of breath. I'm out of shape. Yeah, no, like talking about marriage and babies on the first date and saying I love you, or like almost saying I love you within the first couple of weeks.
Luckily, I was such a hot fucking mess because he lived in like a giant mansion and had all the coolest toys and was like, let's do this, let's do that. But I was just like, like such a hot mess. I was like, but I want to just be like drunk. Get away. But otherwise that could have really fucked me up, you know?
In my cases, like both of those examples, I was like, I know that they're love bombing me, but this is like also really fun. And I like, I don't really believe it, but I want to believe it, you know?
Yeah.
But I always had one.
That's always a fun.
Yeah. I had 1 foot in and 1 foot out. So I like, because I was able to identify it. Although I think when I was younger, I definitely fell for it with less extreme cases.
Don't you also love, though, like when you do that, you're like, okay, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Like, I completely understand what's happening, and you do, but then you're still like an emotional disaster and you cannot understand why. You're like, but I went into this knowing, like, what?
You're like, fuck. I should be in power getting into a relationship with a narcissist.
Yeah. So, like, what? I just, my friend and I had sushi, like, 2 years ago, and she was like, I'm finally over my boyfriend. We're going to go have dinner. And I'm just so excited to be like, fuck you. And I was like, you're going to be dealing with this decision for years because you're not ready for that. No matter what you think that you are, it's not true. And today we had coffee and she's still in the cycle. God,
I know that very well. I hope that isn't me getting these neurofeedback sessions from this, like, hippie alternative medicine hokey practitioner where I'm like, I know that this is hokey, but it's okay. I won't get sucked into his cult.
The funniest thing is that you keep calling it hokey. I've like never heard that word.
What? Hokey. Really? Hokey.
I mean, not to describe like corny spiritual shit. No, which is like my main vibe. Hokey. Hokey.
Am I using the word wrong?
I mean, I just always thought of it as something country, like,
oh, too emotional or artificial to be believed. Or according to Urban Dictionary, another name for a very, very loose vagina. So that,
oh,
those are the, oh. All, those are the definition options.
Is that where you learn the word, Lola?
Okay, maybe hokey's not the word. Maybe I mean, what word would you use?
I guess like foo-foo.
Yeah, like, foo-foo.
I think you can maintain your like, one foot in, one foot out. Much easier if you're not in a romantic relationship with somebody.
Famous last words.
Famous last words. But I think you have a handle on this one.
No,
I think
you're right.
Okay.
You're right. You're absolutely right. In this case, because I don't find his personality to be compelling and there's no one else who's like,
yeah.
I hope he never listens to this. It's perfectly nice. Perfectly nice. Just
I have two of them. If you're listening, you're the other one.
I just don't believe in, you know, chakras necessarily or that kind of thing. So
chakras are my main bitch. I'm obsessed with
them. I know you love them.
Oh,
you're such a chakra bitch.
I am a chakra whore. I want more chakras. And we have like millions of them.
I am an anti-chakra activist is what I am.
Oh my God. We're on different lines of the fence.
All right. Well, I have to go eat my Thai food now.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? That's just perfectly fine with the rest of us because we're going to meet up here again next week. Everybody, we hope you have a lovely week. Remember to follow your gut, watch out for red flags, and never, ever
trust me. Bye.
Bye.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.